AP Radio News. I'm Tim McGuire. Thousands are marching on a cold, dreary day in central Moscow. Today's demonstration in honor of Boris Nemtsov, a political opponent of the Putin government who was shot and killed while walking across a bridge Friday night in the center of the Russian capital. The march could serve to energize the opposition or could prove to be a brief outpouring of emotion that disappears in a climate of fear of Putin's rule. More snow today. Central and northern New Mexico, which already saw accumulation records fall on Friday and Saturday. Storm moved across the areas of California, bringing much-needed precipitation, heavy snow to the mountain ski areas. Another storm rolling through the Midwest from the Plain States.
Could see some significant travel problems today across the Ohio Valley and Mid-Atlantic and parts of the Northeast.
That's National Weather Service meteorologist Bruce Sullivan. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is on his way to Washington. Before boarding a plane today, he said his speech to Congress on Tuesday will address a deep and genuine concern about his country's safety in the light of the international nuclear talks with Iran. The speech has set off an uproar, Netanyahu angering the Obama administration and Democrats by accepting the invitation from Republicans who did not consult with the White House in advance. Australia, Indonesia, and Malaysia team up to put in place a system that improves tracking airliners flying routes over remote sections of the Indian and Pacific Oceans. The three countries want to track planes every 15 minutes rather than the previous rate of every 30 to 40 minutes. The idea is to more easily find aircraft should they vanish, such as Malaysia Airlines Flight 370. This is AP Radio News. A New York couple married for more than eight decades celebrate their combined birthdays. Here's our Julie Walker.
Dornar Villard turned 108 years old yesterday, and his wife Jean turns 105 in May. They're celebrating with family this weekend at the Spring Valley home they share with their daughter. They've been married for 82 years. Mr. Villard is a native of Haiti. He was a lawyer and a judge there. He and his wife moved to the U.S. in 1968, raising five children. Their daughter says, though nearly blind and hard of hearing, Mr. Villard still cracks jokes in Creole and does push-ups after getting up before dawn. Julie Walker, New York.
An Afghan official says nearly 200 people have been killed by a massive avalanche in the mountainous valley about 60 miles from the capital, Kabul. Bulldozers and other machinery being used to clear the roads, allowing rescue teams to finally reach remote villages that have been cut off for almost a week. I'm Tim McGuire, AP Radio News.
Let's celebrate. Celebrate the survivors. Celebrate the progress made. On Saturday, May 9th, Mother's Day weekend, join the Komen D.C. Race for the Cure on the National Mall. The annual 5K walk-run is an event the whole family can enjoy. Komen has invested over $35 million in the National Capital Region, and with your help, they can continue to fund life-saving breast cancer screenings, treatment, and services. For more information and to register, visit KomenDCRaceForTheCure.org.
This is Mark Amtower. If you're looking for cost-effective and efficient methods for marketing your products or services to the government or to other government contractors, look to LinkedIn. There are over 400,000 members in the D.C. area and more than 92 million nationwide, but only a small percentage actually use it well. I can show you how to leverage LinkedIn in ways that support your marketing, sales, and business development efforts. I do this for large and small companies, and I can do it for you. Drop me a line at mark@federaldirect.net.
The Honor Flight Network is a nonprofit organization created solely to honor America's veterans for their service and sacrifice. The charity transports our nation's heroes free of charge from their local airport to Washington, D.C. to visit their war memorials and Arlington National Cemetery. This year, Compass Rose Charities is supporting the Honor Flight Network as their 2015 charity of choice. Help them reach their goal of chartering an entire plane. Sponsor a veteran's flight by donating today. For more information, Google Compass Rose Charities.
This is Mark Amtower. If you're looking for cost-effective and efficient methods for marketing your products or services to the government or to other government contractors, look to LinkedIn. There are over 400,000 members in the D.C. area and more than 92 million nationwide, but only a small percentage actually use it well. I can show you how to leverage LinkedIn in ways that support your marketing, sales, and business development efforts. I do this for large and small companies, and I can do it for you. Drop me a line at mark@federaldirect.net.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Executive Leaders Radio. In this hour, you'll hear directly from our region's finest business leaders. Through each of the interviews, these high-achieving leaders become relatable role models who share how they were able to build their enterprise, their personal secrets of success, about leadership styles and opportunities that lie ahead. Prepare to be inspired and entertained and to hear wisdom unheard elsewhere. Executive Leaders Radio.
You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio, broadcast from the offices of Offa Kerman. This is your host, Herb Cohen, with my co-hosts, Peter Schwartz, Vistage, and Mark Cohen, Opti4 Wealth Management. We've got a great lineup of guests for you on our show today. Mr. Mark Cohen, please give us the rundown.
Sure. First, we're going to talk to Mike Myers, the CEO and Chief Possibilitarian of CyberCore Technologies. Then it's Mark Mikatishin, Executive Chairman of Tangible Security. Harold Cohen, President and CEO of SEEPCO Contracting. And Joyce Wessel-Razor, Executive Director of National Military Family Association.
Excellent. Let's get to know Mike Myers, CEO and Chief Possibilitarian of CyberCore Technologies. What is CyberCore Technologies?
CyberCore Technologies, IT company, three lines of business focusing on cyber supply chain security for the products and systems that we deliver to our customers. We also have a line of business where we provide IT managed services on a consumption model. And then lastly, a professional services staff of about 180.
How large or how small is this business?
250 employees, 180 million.
Uh-huh. And how'd you get a job with this company?
I was picked by the founder and co-founder to come into the company. I'd been with CSC for many years, and they chose
me. What was your original role when you started with the company?
Business development.
And then you ended up the CEO and Chief Possibilitarian.
Yes, quite the step, isn't it?
Very interesting. Where are you from originally?
Indiana originally, and then Pennsylvania later on in my life.
Indiana. And how many brothers and sisters do you have?
I have one younger sister.
One younger sister. What's her name?
Dawn.
Dawn. And what would Dawn tell us about her older brother, Mike?
She's very proud of me.
When you were little kids, tell us the truth.
I was always the instigator of anything that went wrong in the house. Mm-hmm. I was usually the one to blame and was her scapegoat for almost anything.
I see. And tell us, what was how young were you when you were taking things to the next level? Because I understand you were brought into this role, into this company, to do business development. Now you're the CEO. It just seems to me you take things to the next level. I'm trying to figure out what you were like as a kid. How young were you when you started? How young were you when you started making money?
Well, that's a trick question. There's work, and then there's actually making money at work. Mm-hmm. As a young child, I started a little business, which really didn't pay a whole lot, if anything, but I was fixing bicycles in my father's gas station.
Fixing bicycles in your father's gas station, and this was your idea to start this business?
Yes, it was.
Uh-huh. You were working in your father's gas station. Was he paying you?
No, he was not.
Whose idea was it for you to go to work in the gas station?
It was actually mine. I saw an opportunity I like to fix my own bike, and then it kind of somebody brought their bike in.
So
and
as
snowball.
Opposed to your dad telling you, I need you here, at 8 years old, you wanted to work.
Yes.
I'm wondering if that has had any effect on your career. What effect has that had on your business career, the fact that you like work and you like taking things the next step?
Well, I think it's been a huge enabler.
What do you mean?
Well, I think through my whole career, it's really been about a work ethic that I've always been doing something. I've been put in situations where work was necessary as a survival as opposed to work for pleasure.
Mm-hmm. Mark?
Mike, one of your titles is Chief Possibilitarian. Where does that come from?
Well, originally the word possibilitarian is from Norman Vincent Peale, who coined the word possibilitarian. But I took it to the step of bringing that theme to the company. Because there's always a way, right? There's even no matter how bleak it looks.
What do you mean there's always a way?
There's always a solution, right?
We just have to keep looking. There's problems. We hear about walls and brick and obstacles and all these problems. You're telling me you really believe there's always a way?
There's always a way.
Where did that come from? Where did that belief come from?
Because I've always had to find the way in my career.
Give us an example. What do you mean?
Well, it goes back to the fact that out of high school, did not go to college. Was just a laborer, realized that wasn't really what I wanted to do my whole life, was be a laborer. Mm-hmm. So I joined the Army and then took advantage of that, got my two-year college degree while I was in the military. Mm-hmm. And then I just have always found mentors to follow along to learn from.
I understand your parents got divorced when you were 15. What did you learn from that experience?
how to grow up really fast.
What are you talking about? What do you mean?
Well, I was at the age of 15, and so I think you had basically two choices, right? You could either go off without any real adult supervision. You could probably end up in a pathway that would not lead to where I am today, or you make choices to try to fight through it yourself.
So it sounds to me, though, as opposed to really doing it yourself, you've mentioned the word mentors. It sounded to me like you brought other men and women nearby to help groom you through the course of time. So it sounds to me like you took responsibility, but you didn't separate yourself from everybody else. Rather, you chose mentors.
Absolutely. First one of those mentors was my grandfather that, you know, I still wear his ring today to remind me of that. And he led me through some dark times, and I learned a lot from him. But then once I got into the business world, it was really easy to see there are doers.
How do you think your grandfather would feel if he knew what you were up to nowadays?
I think he would be extremely proud.
But why do you think so?
Because he saw the pathway. He saw that I did it myself, that it wasn't something that was handed to me, probably somewhat of a non-traditional route to get to where I am, and I think that would be very
What did you get from him that you use every day?
My grandfather would just have very keen business sense. Perhaps sometimes you could use the word shrewd, but I learned how he dealt with people and that he was always fair and honest and always worked for a tough deal, honest.
So what do you think he would really enjoy about the success you're having nowadays?
Oh, that's a trick question. Again,
I tried to ask the good ones.
I know. I think he, what would he really enjoy? Just, I think the end result of where I am, the fact that I did it.
Did what? What are you talking about?
Well, I think when you reach this level where you're running a company, you're responsible for a lot of people, and to achieve that, to achieve success at the family level as well. You know, I've blessed with two great kids. They're
you
doing
have
well.
Kids? How old are the kids?
26 and 25.
What's the similarity between being a father and being the CEO of an organization that's 250 people? What's the similarity?
Well, I'm going to change that if I may. It's probably
Please.
More the differences. Because I think I could be sitting here probably 10 years ago with a lot less gray hair had I made the choice. But early in my career, when I was at that point of actually starting to accept more management responsibilities and take more leadership, I chose family over that. And so while my children were going through their development through grade school, high school, I chose to be more of the dad who was at home to rake the baseball field, put the lines on the field, put the soccer nets up. I made those choices in lieu of the longer days at the office because that was important to me. When they went off to college, then I kind of got back in the saddle of where I wanted to go professionally.
What's the toughest thing you've ever accomplished?
The toughest thing I've ever accomplished was to make the choice to get out of the labor force as a common laborer and actually start the path of trying to do something on my own.
What was the first step you took once you made that choice?
Well, it was to join the Army because I had, you know, there was no savings. There was not, I'd missed my opportunities on college. I had opportunities to play football, chose not to do that.
How long were you in the Army?
4 years.
What'd you learn from that?
That if you work, I mean, the Army is an awesome opportunity. Went to school for 38 weeks of training, graduated top of my class, and they kept me as an instructor. So that put me in a position of actually working with people as an instructor to gain more knowledge. Then I started my pathway to start getting my own education. And so when I finally graduated from the University of Maryland in 1995, I was very proud that I had a 7-year-old and a 5-year-old that actually got to see Daddy graduate. So I thought that was a good model for my children as well.
How would you characterize your leadership style?
My leadership style is I think, a servant leader. I believe that you have to have faith and you have to treat people fairly. You have to be clear on your expectations so that there's not a lot of, there's not discussion at the end of the day, what was I supposed to do? If you're really clear and set expectations, I think the whole process goes a lot easier.
So I hear that, you've got this real people side to you and this hard work side to you. But isn't it different, though, being a CEO and having to tell people what to do and fire people and all that other kinds of stuff?
It's an interesting question because what I found was, just a slight digress, is going from a large company to a smaller company. Is that in a large company there's such the red tape, and you get to a small company, and I found that I would say something out loud as a thought, and next thing you know, people are doing it, and I had to, well, no, wait, I was just thinking about doing that. I wasn't really directing
gotcha.
Anybody to do
Michael?
That.
Yeah,
clearly, work is important to you, and working hard is important to you. What are your other passions?
From a hobby perspective, passion is I love college football, snow skiing, and just family. I love remodeling. There's always a project of I'm either gutting, wiring, plumbing, hanging drywall, painting. I'm always doing some sort of activity around that.
Hmm. Interesting. The future. More opportunities tomorrow, or were there more opportunities yesterday?
Oh, definitely tomorrow. I'm so excited about, especially from the CyberCorp perspective, where tomorrow can go, mm-hmm. and where I think that, you know, we've got pathways, we've got strategies, and where we can take the company. I'm extremely excited about tomorrow.
It sounds to me like you found out stuff about yourself you didn't know as a kid, huh?
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. What's the website address for
CyberCorpTech.com.
CyberCorpTech.com. By the way, what was the most important thing you found out about yourself as an adult you didn't know as a kid?
The most important thing as an adult that as a kid, that with leadership comes responsibility, mm-hmm. And you're not only accountable to just yourself, that your actions don't always just harm yourself, that there's a lot of other people that are on the other side of your choices.
Excellent. We're speaking with Mike Myers, CEO and Chief Possibilitarian of CyberCorp Technology, on Executive Reader Leaders Radio. My co-host Mark Cohen, off the Four Wealth Management and Pitch Sports Vistage. This is Herb Cohen. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com. Learn more about our executive leaders. We'll be back in a moment right after this business spotlight.
This is Peter Schwartz with Vistage International, and this is your business spotlight. Joining me for this segment is Doug Kay, who is a principal with a firm called Offutt Kerman. What is Offutt Kerman, Doug?
Offutt Kerman is a full-service law firm in the Mid-Atlantic region with offices from Philadelphia all the way down to Tysons Corner, Virginia, where I work.
Right. And you're a lawyer with the firm?
I'm a lawyer with the firm.
What practice area do you specialize in?
I mostly do work in commercial litigation, although I also do work in doing criminal defense and personal injury, anything that gets me to trial.
Anything that gets you to trial. Well, why do your customers appreciate you?
I think they appreciate me because I am a careful and sympathetic listener, and I try to offer concrete solutions to their most vexing legal problems.
Well, give us an example. Do you have one, without mentioning specifics, a recent example of where you were really good at this? How about your favorite client up till now, without getting into two particulars there?
Well, I represented a fellow who was in a commercial lease, and the landlord was determined to make him pay more than he should have been paying. And we had to go to court, and we had to go all the way through trial, and the client really appreciated the effort, and we got an excellent result for the client. And that was very satisfying, and since then he's been talking me up all over town, so I can't thank him enough.
Yeah. What's the best part of practicing law for you?
I would say that it is taking people through difficult circumstances when they think they don't have any options and trying to find a good solution for them.
Right. What's the website address for the law firm?
www.offuttkerman.com.
Thank you. We've been speaking with Doug Kay, who's the principal with Offutt Kerman. This is Peter Schwartz, and that was your business spotlight.
This is Les Mullen with Vistage International, and this is your business spotlight. Joining us today is Mark Cohn, founder of Cohn and Burnett, a law firm. Mark, welcome. What is Cohn and Burnett?
We are a law firm that focuses on trusts and estates. So we do wills, trusts, powers of attorney, estate planning, and estate administration.
And what's your role in the company?
I'm the founder and the senior partner.
So what does that mean to be a senior partner?
Well, it means that in our case, I'm the thought leader, the visionary, the one who tries to figure out where we're headed. I'm not the managing partner who runs the day-to-day operations.
Okay, and what makes Cohn and Burnett so special?
We are first of all, focused on taking care of our clients and just on their estate planning and administration. And I think we're one of the first firms in the area to introduce a fixed fee for doing estate planning.
Interesting. And what do they really appreciate about you and the company, your clients, that is?
You know, the clients tell me that they just love the experience. They are very comfortable and confident that their needs are being met here, and they enjoy working with us.
Hmm. And who or what is your perfect client, if you will?
Our perfect client is anybody who cares about what's going to happen to them when they can no longer take care of themselves or their family.
Mm-hmm. And what is it you actually enjoy most about the work?
You know, talking to the clients, That's the part. I could turn over all of the work to other attorneys here, but I hold on to the first part, which is meeting the clients, talking to them, getting to know them, getting to understand where they're, what they need and what they're looking for.
That's great. What's the website for Cohen & Burnett?
CohenAndBurnett.com, all spelled out, the A-N-D in between there.
Thank you, Mark. We've been speaking with Mark Cohen, founder of Cohen & Burnett. This is Les Smolin, and that's been your Business Spotlight.
We're back. You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Herb Cohen, with my co-host, Mark Cohen, Optifor for Wealth Management, and Pete Schwartz Vistage. I'd like to introduce Mark McAtishan, who is the executive chairman of an organization known as Tangible Security. Mark, what is Tangible Security? What kind of stuff do you guys do?
Tangible focuses mostly on network security from two aspects, mm-hmm. Both offensive and defensive. So we offer a number of products and solutions ranging from identity management solutions to vulnerability assessments.
Where are you from originally?
Scotch Plains, New Jersey.
Scotch Plains, New Jersey. How many brothers and sisters?
I have a twin brother named Tom and an older sister named Karen.
A twin brother named Tom. So when you were kids, how were you and Tom different?
Well, my mom would say that I was Tom's biggest fan. He was a comedian. He was an instigator. I was more of the, you know, serious type. And I always laughed at everything he put in front of me. So
So you're prone to serious thinking, huh?
At times, yes.
Now, this organization, this Tangible Security, how'd you get involved with it?
About 3.5 years ago, I put together an investor group and led the buyout of the company.
So you brought investors into the deal, so they had to believe in you and the deal, because they didn't want to operate the deal. They wanted you to, so they had to believe in you and the deal.
Correct.
Right, so you had to really think this thing through, and they had to really check you out. They had to really have confidence in you, right?
They did, yes. It was a process.
So you're a thinker, right?
Yes.
All right. What on the other hand, which is left brain stuff, but how important is intuition in business, which is all the right brain stuff?
I think it's really a balance between critical thinking and intuition.
Give us an example of how intuition fits into your business day, into your business thinking.
I think it fits in every day. As our other guests, I'm sure, will share, you make decisions every day, and they're not always the same ones. You know, one day it could be a strategic decision about how do we grow the business inorganically. Another day it could be a decision about who do we hire? Another day it would be, how do we design a feature into a product to solve a problem? So it's really, for me, trying to strike a balance between, you know, how do you think fast? How do you think slow? How do you think critically? How do you think from intuition?
Was there a moment in time where you realized I have to start trusting my intuition? When did you realize it has the power it has?
Well, in a business context, it goes back to a variety of different experiences. But from a business perspective, back in the early 2000s, I co-founded and ran a venture capital fund, and the tech bubble burst literally 3 weeks after we closed our fund.
Ooh.
So at that point, we had already been making investments prior to actually closing the fund. So we had to regroup very quickly and think intuitively about how we were going to communicate, you know, the differences in our strategic approach given the changing market conditions. So,
Mike?
What role does luck play in business? Is it better to be lucky or good?
It's a critical role. I think luck and timing are very important in what you do.
What do you mean? Tell us about that. What do you mean?
Business example. Going back to 2004, we bought this is between my two funds. We bought a company that was a baseband satellite communication company, providing SATCOM services to the military. And we bought the company in 2004. They had a product that worked. The Army was deploying to Iraq and Afghanistan. Every brigade commander needed a satellite capability. So our product worked. It was reliable. And every brigade commander that rotated over to either Iraq or Afghanistan bought it. The company grew from $35 million in revenue to $35 million in EBITDA in 18 months. And so we sold the business for a very, very high return to our equity investors. So, that was a really function of being in the right place at the right time.
If you wanted to financially retire, you could.
Not really, no.
Well, you did pretty well in that deal, it sounds like.
Well, you learn from your experiences that there are times where you invest money and you take equity in deals. And the way that one was structured was that our goal was to raise a fund. So the investors mentality was, show us you can do really well on this one, and we'll back you on the next venture.
Well, it sounds so to me like you really enjoy business. You love you. It feels to me like you enjoy the art of business, the intellectual challenge of it all.
I do. I think there's an art and science to it.
Yeah, it sounds like it's like a chess puzzle to you.
So luck favors the prepared mind. There's no such thing as luck. What is it about the way you think that allows you to see opportunity before most other people?
That's really how I spend a lot of my time, actually, is just trying to think through what's next. And a lot of that I get really from being a military aviator.
Have you been able to do this all your life? I mean, how did you acquire this kind of a skill?
I don't know that I really acquired it. It's just one of the things I've always done.
So your brother was a comedian, you were the deep thinker.
Perhaps that's the case, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. But it's always just trying to be prepared for whatever you do and thinking about what's next.
Katie?
You attributed some of your success to being an aviator. What would you say are the key, I guess, maybe skill sets or attributes that have served you well as an aviator?
I think you have to be unafraid to take risk, but it's not uncalculated risk. You have to be prepared to do whatever you need to do to accomplish the mission, and things never go right. So, as aviators, you plan incessantly. You plan for what goes right, you prepare for what's going to go wrong, and you have to adapt on the fly to how things are going to change.
Is that the same as in business?
I believe it is. You have to set a strategy, but strategies never really play out the way you intend them to.
Mm-hmm.
There's always going to be something that happens. Either your funding doesn't come through, mm-hmm. or a contract gets pushed to the right, mm-hmm. or you couldn't hire the engineer you wanted to hire. So,
mm-hmm. Do you still use a checklist in your business, or did that just stay with the airplanes?
No, I do, actually. I mean, that's the way I organize myself. I finally got some help as with an assistant here over the last few weeks, and every week I just lay out, I've got a separate spreadsheet for every part of what I do in the business, and I just review it every week, and that's how it keeps me organized around what I have to do.
Mm-hmm.
So you were with a fund, a venture capital fund, and now you are running a company, but you said earlier in the green room that making money wasn't the key. What is?
It's really the value of the relationships you build along the way and finding people that can help you achieve outcomes. So for me, if I came into the company every day and worried about making money on a tactical basis, that would erode from what I have to do on a daily basis to think about what's next and anticipating how things are going to go wrong.
Well, what effect did having a twin have on your business career and on your being?
Well, I went to the Naval Academy undergraduate. On the day that I got inducted to the Naval Academy, my brother went to college on a tennis scholarship, and he had hair that was longer than his shoulders, and he really enjoyed that part of his life. Really, I think, respected what I did, but it was always great to have a balance point. The Naval Academy tends to...
So you're pretty comfortable with intimate relationships. You really enjoy talking things through and working things through with people because you had that with your brother.
Yeah, for me, that really works.
Hmm.
And as per...
You're probably a really good team builder, aren't you?
I'd like to think so.
Yeah, I bet. What's the website address for this organization known as Tangible Security?
TangibleSecurity.com.
TangibleSecurity.com. We've been speaking with Mark Mikitishyn. He's the Executive Chairman of Tangible Security here on Executive Leaders Radio with my co-host Mark Cohen, Optifor Wealth Management, and Pete Schwartz Vistage. This is Herb Cohen. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. That's executiveleadersradio.com. We'll be back in a moment right after this Business Spotlight. And your name is?
Dana Theus.
And the name of the organization?
InPowerCoaching.com.
And what does InPower Coaching do?
Well, we support mid-level to senior managers and leaders achieve professional success by developing themselves personally.
Why does this turn you on so much?
Well, I have found in my own experience and my own leadership journey that the better I was at being a good human being, the better leader and the better business I ran and the more successful I was. And I want to help other people do that.
So you're able to help the folks in an organization throughout the organization achieve what they're looking for, as well as help the organization move forward?
Well, to move an organization forward, mm-hmm. you've got to master the soft skills of mm-hmm. dealing with people effectively.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to learn to negotiate every relationship successfully mm-hmm. for mm-hmm. both parties.
Mm-hmm.
You have to communicate confidently.
Mm-hmm.
I support people and help them learn to develop those skills themselves to be strong mm-hmm. leaders.
And you have a specialty working with women?
I do work a lot with women. Mm-hmm. They're drawn to this work, but not mm-hmm. exclusively.
Mm-hmm. And to learn more about what you're up to, is there a website address?
InPowerCoaching.com. That's InPowerCoaching.com.
Excellent. This has been your Business Spotlight.
This is Les Smolin with Vistage International, and this is your Business Spotlight. Joining us today is Isabella Fuentes, Marketing Director at BusinessWise CPAs. Isabella, what is BusinessWise CPAs?
BusinessWise CPA supports government contractors, small businesses, and nonprofits with outsourced CFO and financial consulting services.
And what's your role in the company?
I'm the marketing director.
And as a marketing director, what does that mean?
Well, I actually wear several hats. My primary role is to improve and extend the branding of BusinessWise CPA through referrals, client meetings, networking in the DC area, mm-hmm. As well as supporting current client relationships.
And what do you like most about your job?
I like the most that I don't have to be at a desk all day. I'm out and about meeting new folks and learning experiences from other entrepreneurs.
Great. What makes your organization so special in your view?
I believe our added value is that we are not just a number report kind of type firm. We're very much integrated with our clients. They rely on us for all important decisions. We help them not only with the numbers, but on the future growth of the business.
And what is it that the clients appreciate most about the company?
That they can call us and they talk to the same person every time.
Okay, and who's the perfect client?
Perfect client is small to mid-size organization looking to save on a full-time employee and as well as get the added value of the consulting.
Great. What's the website for the company?
www.businesswisecpa.com.
Thank you. We've been speaking with Isabella Fuentes, Marketing Director at BusinessWise CPAs. This is Les Smolin, and that's been your Business Spotlight. This is Les Smolin with Vistage International. And this is your Business Spotlight. Joining us today is Dr. Shirley Davis, President and CEO, The Success Doctor. Welcome, Shirley. Shirley, what's The Success Doctor all about?
It's a global workforce and talent management consulting organization. What we do is track trends and we identify best practices and strategies for organizations around the world of all sizes, all industries, mm-hmm. and help them understand how to get great talent, how to keep it, and how to make sure that they get the most out of
them. And what's your role in the company?
My role is president and CEO, and I actually do a lot of the coaching and speaking and consulting.
And what do you like most about that?
I absolutely love the strategy development and helping to get leaders to that aha moment.
Mm-hmm. And what makes the organization so special, in your view?
Capturing a lot of the great best practices that we've been able to do. And I think, you know, my brand, I build great relationships and I provide them what they need instead of what I want them to have.
Mm-hmm. And what do you think the clients appreciate most about you and your company?
I make the strategies, even though they're global, I make them very, very customized and practical.
Uh-huh. And who, in your view, is the ideal client? The perfect client.
The perfect client is one that has a need, and the perfect client is one that can recognize that there is an opportunity with the strategies that we provide for them to make their organizations better.
Mm-hmm. And what do you personally enjoy most about the work?
I love seeing the strategies come to life. I love seeing the impact and the results that come as a result of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I love when they call me back and thank me because they've seen change.
That's excellent. And what's the website for the company?
DrShirleyDavis.com. That's www.drshirleydavis.com.
Thank you, Shirley. We've been speaking with Dr. Shirley Davis, President and CEO, The Success Doctor. This is Les Smolin, and that's been your Business Spotlight.
We're back. You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Herb Cohen, with my co-host, Mark Cohen, Optiful Wealth Management, and Pete Schwartz Vistage. I'd like to introduce Harold Charles, who is the President and CEO of CEPCO Contracting. Harold, what is CEPCO Contracting? What kind of stuff are you guys doing?
We specialize in engineering, construction, facilities management, and transportation.
Where's that accent from?
From Haiti. I was born in New York, and when I was one, my parents moved down to Haiti, and I was raised there till I was 16.
So you moved from the age of one to Haiti. Your parents wanted to move back. And you were mentioning to me earlier that CEPCO has been involved, the business you started, has been involved in doing some interesting things in Haiti. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. In 2009, I happened to be in Haiti for my parents' 50th wedding anniversary, and I felt a strong calling that it is time for me to come back and, you know, give back to Haiti. So I decided to look for opportunities, and that was before the earthquake. The earthquake was in 2010, and so we stayed there after the earthquake and helped with the reconstruction. And
so what have
there.
You been able to do since the earthquake in Haiti?
Creating jobs, building capacities.
How have you been able to help with creating jobs in Haiti? What are you talking about?
Well, we've had contracts with the U.S. government, with the U.N., with the
doing what kind of stuff?
Been doing mostly engineering and construction work. And so we've been able to hire construction workers and also bring people down.
You mentioned earlier that this what you felt like this was a calling. Isn't that the word you used?
Yes.
I wonder if that's what your dad felt going back to Haiti when you were 1 year old. Do you think you got a chunk of your dad in you?
Yes.
What do you mean? Tell us about that.
Sure. My dad is a physician, and he was working at Mount Sinai Hospital in Manhattan, New York. Mm-hmm. And so he decided to go back to Haiti to open up his practice. And so he started a foundation to help all the needy diabetics in Haiti, and he's been doing a lot of community work.
Sounds to me like him. Father like son. Tell us about your mom. What was your mom all about?
Yeah, so my mom has always been on my dad's side, and she still is, and she's been his assistant ever since he started.
Mm-hmm. How many brothers and sisters do you have?
One older brother and one younger sister.
So what are they all about?
Well, my older brother, he's kind of, you know, I've been following his lead. When we grew up, he was always you know, the serious one, and I was always out hanging out with my friends. And so my sister, she is also a physician, and she took over my father's practice.
Mm-hmm. Peter?
You talk about how the impact of just one hire on a local community. Explain that to us.
Well, and hiring in Haiti?
Yeah.
Yes, sure. Well, as you know, Haiti is one of the poorest countries in the world, so the unemployment rate is very high. And so I've been able to hire people there in the last 4 years, 5,000 jobs that I created.
And those 5,000 jobs, what does that do for a community?
Well, when you understand that each head of household is responsible to feed a family of 7 to 10, and so you multiply that by 5,000, and that's how many mouths I've been.
What's it feel like to have that kind of impact?
Well, I mean, I feel proud. I feel good. I see the results. You know, I see guys that are hired as unskilled laborers, and that now, you know, they are heavy equipment operators.
So how does that experience shape the way you lead the company in the United States?
Well, the company in the United States was already formed when I started in Haiti. We started in 2003 here, and we started in Haiti in 2009. But the experience in Haiti most definitely has helped me manage the business better.
What do you remember most about growing up in Haiti, your youngest, earliest memories?
Well, growing up in Haiti, I remember that I was not really very focused in school, and you know, my father was always after me, you know, to always do the right thing. You know, you always have to be honest. You need to work hard. You need to study. And
but so if you were the son of a physician, you were probably living in a more privileged environment than most of your neighbors.
Yes, that's right.
When did you realize the difference?
Well, I think after I left Haiti when I was 16, and then I went back for vacation, and then that's when it kind of hit me that, well, you know, how lucky I was to live in a big house with a pool.
Was it then you realized someday I have to come back and give back?
At that time, no. At that time, I was more focused on, you know, learning everything I could from when I was in Canada or when I was here in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
But when I went back, when I felt that calling back in 2009, that's when I realized that it was time for me to come back to the country.
So, Harold, your father's a physician, your sister's a physician. Why didn't you go into medicine?
Actually, I was I had the opportunity, but I was living in Canada back then, right after high school. And actually, they have what they call a CEGEP, which is like a between the university and a high school in Canada. But in order to go to med school, you had to be a Canadian citizen or a resident of Canada. But I'm a U.S. citizen, so I was not allowed to or not able to enter medical school. So I went into engineering.
So of all the possible careers, from anything like English literature, philosophy, whatever, you chose engineering. Was that your only other choice?
Well, actually, because I love math. And in fact, when I was in college, my math was also my, you know, my minor. And so I like science. And so I went into engineering.
Michael?
What do you think is in your background that gave you the confidence to transition from engineering to entrepreneurship?
I think the wanting to see the results and the engineering, the connection is that you have a formula that you can follow. You have basically a path that you follow, and you you surrounded with other professionals. And I've been educating myself a lot. I went to postgraduate school. I have my advanced degrees. Master's degrees, professional engineering.
Peter, license. What's your proudest moment up till now?
My proudest moment is the work that I've been able to do in Haiti to make people's life better.
Katie, did you?
If you didn't come from a family of so many entrepreneurs, do you think you would have still chosen the path that you have, or maybe have just stayed working for someone else?
Well, probably not. I think I would have probably stayed working for the federal government, where I had been for 19 years. But my brother was an inspiration to me in terms of being self-employed and following his lead.
So have you been back to Haiti?
Yes, I usually go twice a month.
You stay at fancy dancy hotels when you get to Haiti?
I'm sorry?
You stay at fancy dancy hotels when you get there?
Well, actually, I have a home office there. So we have two offices in Haiti, and in each, I have a bedroom.
Do you ever get in the field? Do you ever go out into the field in Haiti?
Oh, yes, of course.
Doing
yes,
what kind of stuff? What do you do?
I have construction sites. So we've been building bridges, houses, roads. And,
do you ever talk to the people there? Do you ever talk to the people on the street?
Oh, yes, I do. Yes, all the time.
Yeah,
yes.
What do you talk to them about?
Well, I ask them, how things, and I help a lot of them out with paying their kids' tuition, and I...
Wait. What?
Yes, a lot of people that are around me, I am responsible for helping them out financially. Yes, so whether you're working for me or not, I have helped a lot. In the community.
Why don't you just buy another car or buy a nicer house? Why would you go ahead and give your money away?
Well, I mean, I truly believe in helping people. I think that building capacity and making people's lives better is a good thing.
Wouldn't you rather have a nicer car?
Well, I mean, I have that here, and I don't think I need to be in Haiti to show off. I need to be in Haiti, to help the poor people. And so I'm not a huge spender. I can live comfortably with what I have.
So you're not somebody who needs to show you don't need to show off.
No, because I believe that what I could show off is what's in my mind, what I learned in school, and my experience in life, not the material stuff.
So you want to show them your heart as opposed to your car?
Certainly.
If I was interviewing your father, what did he say about you right now?
Well, he would say that he's very, very proud of me from where I came from, because out of these three children, I was the one that gave him, more of a hard time.
Oh, you're gonna go get in trouble with that answer. Well, why do you think he'd be so proud of you? Why?
Because of my accomplishment academically and professionally. I mean, I started a company from zero. My first contract was a $1,200 contract, and I made $200 to a company.
I understand you're running an $18 million business, but it sounds to me like your real accomplishment is what you're doing in Haiti, talking to those people.
Yes, talking to the people make you understand that they're my frame and what they need to accomplish in life, and you get to learn a lot by talking to these people.
Hmm. So you really give them back.
Yes. Yes. Hmm. Mm-hmm.
And mom and dad, are they still around? Mom and dad still around?
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm.
It is. How do they feel about what you're doing in Haiti?
Well, they are proud of me, proud of the work that I do in Haiti, because I'm following their lead. They're also doing a lot of helping out, in Haiti. And so the fact that I'm taking time away from my business to be in Haiti and help out.
Harold, what's the website address for CEEPCO Contracting?
CEEPCO.com.
How do you spell that?
CEEPCO.com.
We've been speaking with Harold Charles, who's the president and CEO of CEEPCO Contracting, here on Executive Leaders Radio with my co-host Mark Cohen, Optifor Wealth Management. and Pete Schwartz Vistage. This is Herb Cohen. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com. To learn more about our executive leaders, that's executiveleadersradio.com. We'll be back in a moment right after this Business Spotlight.
Joining us for this Business Spotlight is Wes Burnett, partner at Optifor. Wes, what is Optifor?
Optifor is a securities firm that integrates legal, tax, and financial and risk in order to offer optimal results for clients.
Who's your perfect client?
Perfect client is someone who actually would like to combine services, make their life simpler, and is very family-oriented. Our firm itself is very family-oriented. We love helping families take care of their own, and that can be multi-generational.
So what would a family need when they would come to you?
Typically, what they're doing is trying to simplify their personal life by trying to have somebody else worry about their legal and their tax and financial affairs and present them with solutions rather than questions.
Solutions rather than questions. So give us an example of a good solution.
A good solution is something that results, for example, in the lowest tax bill, the greatest savings, and taking care of the values important to the family, like saving for college for children or grandchildren or something along those lines.
So what do you enjoy most about your work?
My clients. Although a second place, a close would be my staff, because I recruit very specifically people who have the same values as our clients. So we truly are very involved with our clients' lives, and they are family to us.
What about your family? Are they in the business too?
No. Although there's certainly plenty of lawyers and financial advisors and so on in the business, but no, they all have their own lives, and we're very pleased, quite frankly, with that. I actually have a wife who's a teacher for 42 years, so I take a lot of my values from her.
What is the website?
Optifor.com, OPTIFOUR.com.
Thanks for listening to this Business Spotlight.
This is Les Smolin with Vistage International, and this is your Business Spotlight. Joining us today is Jody Ruth, founder and president of Acumetrics. Welcome, Jody. Jody, what is Acumetrics?
Acumetrics is a firm that works with CEOs that are interested in growing their revenues and bottom lines in a scalable, sustainable way.
And what's your role within the company?
I'm the founder and president.
And what is it about the job that you bring that's so unique to you, that special gift, as we say?
That special gift? I enjoy working with the CEOs to have them achieve goals that they thought were impossible.
And what is it about the organization that makes it so special?
Our clients say that it's the three P's: our people, our platform, and our processes. Our people are highly qualified and they're fun to work with. Mm-hmm. Our processes are enabling of reliable and timely financial information, and our platform is scalable.
And who is, or what is perhaps, the perfect client for you?
Businesses of any size that want reliable, timely financial information.
Mm-hmm. And what do you enjoy most about this work?
I enjoy working with the clients and making a difference. We like to help the CEOs understand their financial information so they can make different choices tomorrow to impact future results of the business.
That's great. What's the website for the company?
www.acumetricsllc.com.
Thank you, Jody.
Thanks, Les.
We've been speaking with Jody Ruth, founder and president of Acumetrics. This is Les Smolin, and that's been your Business Spotlight.
Joining us for this Business Spotlight is Wes Burnett, managing partner of Cohen & Burnett PC. Wes, what is Cohen & Burnett PC?
Cohen & Burnett PC is a law firm that specializes in integrating legal, tax, and financial advice to help our clients.
And what do clients appreciate most about Cohen & Burnett?
The integration of the advice so that the client gets the best possible legal, tax, and financial result.
So who is your perfect client? What do they need?
The perfect client is someone who's intelligent and caring and wants the best possible legal, tax, and financial advice that they can get.
And why do you enjoy your work?
Because I love my clients, and they know that I appreciate them, and I'm trying to do the best by them.
So how many people work here?
We have a total of 10 people working here for the firm, not counting part-timers.
And why do they like to work for you?
Because they know that they're doing what's best for the client, and they enjoy the satisfaction of doing well by the client.
And what's the company's web address?
www.cohenandburnett.com.
Thank you for listening to this Business Spotlight.
Well, we're back. You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Herb Cohen, with my co-host, Mark Cohen, Office for Wealth Management and Pete Schwartz Vistage. We'd like to introduce Joyce Wessel-Razor, who's the Executive Director of the National Military Family Association. Joyce, what is the National Military Family Association?
We're a nonprofit that fights for military families. As advocates, we're their voice on Capitol Hill with the White House, the Department of Defense, but we also provide programs and other ways to support them.
Where are you from originally?
I grew up on a farm in Maryland.
Uh-huh. A farm in Maryland. What kind of farm?
We had dairy cows and chickens.
Mm-hmm. How many brothers and sisters?
I have two younger brothers.
So did you ever have to work doing any of the stuff on this farm, considering you're the oldest sister with two younger brothers?
We all had to work from the time we were very small, and it was feeding cows, gathering eggs, picking up rocks in the fields. There were a variety of jobs. When I got a little older, I helped my dad with the payroll and helped pay bills, and it was just whatever we needed to do.
How interesting. So why does this gig turn you on as the executive director of the National Military Family Association? Why don't you go, like, do something else?
I'm a person whose family loves causes, and I am a military family member. I didn't plan on marrying somebody in the military, but I did. And we moved around. My daughter went to five schools before fifth grade, and so this was my life.
What gave you a sense this kind of association was necessary? Did you tell us something happened with the school board or something?
This association helped me as a military parent. I was on a school board for DOD schools at Fort Knox, Kentucky, and we believed we had a right to have a say in picking our new superintendent. The Department of Defense said, no, we'll handle that for you, and we sued them and won.
How young were you when you began this life of advocacy? Didn't you tell us a story about your father when you were a young girl?
Well, my father liked to make a point. If he believed in something, he believed he needed to go to the person who could fix it, and that meant writing letters to his legislators, to the governor, to whoever.
How were you a co-conspirator in that?
Once I learned how to type, he thought that was a wonderful thing, and I began to type his letters, and he said, fix them up if they need to be.
So you embellished his letters as well, huh?
I fixed them up.
So you got, how young were you when you were helping your father write these advocacy letters?
I was probably high school.
Uh-huh. How did that make you feel?
It made me feel that I was a part of a process to make things better.
You really think you were making things better?
I do. I do.
You think this role that you serve as the executive director of the National Military Family Association is making a difference?
I know it is, because I can point to things that are better for military families because we raised our voice.
Like what? Give me an example.
Probably one of my proudest accomplishments for us was we led the efforts to expand the Women's Infants and Children nutrition program overseas for military families. A lot of our families qualified in the States. When they went overseas, there was nobody running the program. There was no program. Our families were getting diaper coupons and formula coupons from the chaplains. Spouse clubs were trying to raise money. We had military babies who were being hospitalized for malnutrition because the moms weren't getting good nutrition education. And we went to Congress and the champions of the WIC program and said, hey, you need to do something for military families. It took us several years, but we got it.
Mm-hmm. So how do you manage the inevitable emotion around all this?
You use the emotion and you tell the stories, but you also do your research on what the issue is and what the possible solutions are. So what we bring isn't just the story, but it's the well-thought-out solution is what we aim for.
Well, how do you handle the inevitable defeats and setbacks?
You keep trying. The WIC overseas issue took 4 different rounds of legislation before, and then 2 years before DOD implemented the program. So you keep pushing at it.
So you're a powerful advocate. And so my question is, why didn't you go to law school, become a lawyer?
I took two courses at the law school in grad school and said, nope, this is too slow. I started out trying to be a history teacher. That was why I was in grad school, and life got derailed because I married somebody in the military who and got sent across the country, and so mm-hmm. looked for other ways.
Earlier, Katie Jordan from Verisolve asked you a question about, you know, how did you find yourself, you know, we understand that you've got this advocacy thing, but it was something to the effect of you found yourself in this world and you had to manage. What was that all about, this new world, you know? You've got this, you're running an organization as well as advocating. It's two different things, isn't it?
It is two different things. And so you, we get families that we serve and our staff who have this great passion, but you want to, you have to think about that so that we are responsible stewards of our donor dollars mm-hmm. and responsible messengers on behalf of our military families.
Sounds like you're running a business. There's an old story like no money, no mission. Mike, you have a question there?
Is it better to advocate behind the scenes quietly or out front leading?
Mm. It depends on the situation. We've had to do both. Sometimes you can accomplish a lot through behind the scenes meetings with influencers, but sometimes you have to take your case to the public. And one of the things that we work with military families on, that when they have an issue, is sorting out where's the best place to get that issue resolved.
Your two younger brothers, they surprise you ended up like this?
No, they always thought I was too bossy.
All right, I just wanted to make sure. Peter?
How is running a nonprofit like running a farm?
Ooh, good question.
I think the big thing is you have to be in it for the long term. You know, once you decide to be a farmer, it's a little difficult to change careers. You have to go with the ebb and flow of the weather and how the animals are doing and how the crops are doing, and you have to take a long-term view. And I think in the nonprofit space, you have to realize that the population you serve is going to have needs over the long term. We've been around for 45 years and have had to evolve as military families' needs have evolved. And so I think in that way, they're very similar.
Excellent. The website address for the organization is?
Militaryfamily.org.
Militaryfamily.org. Excellent. We've been speaking with Joyce Wessel-Razor, the Executive Director of the National Military Family Association. Mr. Mark Cohen, would you please give us a rundown on who we've had the opportunity of hanging out with today?
Sure. We started with Mike Myers, the CEO and Chief Possibilitarian of CyberCore Technologies, then Mark Mikitishin, Executive Chairman of Tangible Security, then Harold Charles, President and CEO of SEEPCO Contracting, and we just heard from Joyce Wessel-Razor, Executive Director of National Military Family Association.
Excellent. I'd like to thank my co-hosts, Mr. Mark Cohen from Opti4 Wealth Management and Mr. Pete Schwartz from Vistage, for giving me a hand structuring the questions, hopefully providing our listening audience an educational and entertaining show. I'd like to thank our listening audience for listening. Otherwise, we wouldn't have a radio show. One last question for Joyce Wessel-Razor, Executive Director of the National Military Family Association. Do you ever get out in the field and hear from your members the difference you're making?
Yes. Yes, we do. That's the proudest time when I go out and families say, this is something that's helped me.
Excellent.
Try to get out as much as I can.
Namely, the website address for the organization?
Militaryfamily.org.
Excellent. And don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. Have a nice day. Bye-bye.
Thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to Executive Leaders Radio, the region's premier radio show highlighting local executive leaders. We hope you've enjoyed the show here on 1500 AM. You can learn more about Executive Leaders Radio by visiting executiveleadersradio.com or tune in next time right here on 1500 AM. That's executiveleadersradio.com.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWTFMHD2 Manassas, WTLPFMHD2 Braddock Heights Frederick, the Washington, D.C. home of Navy Athletics. Listen each week for Tech Tuesday on Federal News Radio. Every Tuesday, we zero in on how technology inspires innovation. Tuesday mornings at 11, it's Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy, the latest on products that help bring policy to life. Then Tuesday afternoons at 12:30, join Federal News Radio's Jason Miller for Ask the CIO.
Federal News Radio's DoD Wednesday. At 3, DoD reporter Jared Serbu hosts On DoD, a discussion with senior managers about how the department meets its mission. At 4, in-depth host Francis Rose brings you Pentagon Solutions, a smart discussion on the issues and challenges of the defense community. Plus daily DoD updates, mornings and afternoons, Monday through Friday. DoD Wednesday on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions.